It is so encouraging to see such a good number here this evening, especially considering the fact that you heard me yesterday and you're back. It's always a good sign, you know. We do appreciate our visitors being here and want you to know your honored guests, and if I can, I'd like to get to know you before you leave. We appreciate the support that you give this congregation in any way, shape, or fashion. It's a good bunch, and if gospel meetings are judged on their success by notches in the belt, as some gospel preachers do, you know, by the end of the meeting, getting close to that last day, you know, whether you let out a notch or not, that kind of tells you, you know, whether you had a good gospel meeting. I'm in trouble. After yesterday's, it's just food everywhere. I'm in trouble. Let me put it that way. If you judge success on gospel meetings that way, this has been a great success. Of course, too, you can also judge success of a gospel meeting by the comments you get. And you all have been very supportive, but also I had a comment to the contrary. And I can be corrected, and I can make mistakes, and I greatly appreciate someone pointing out when I make those mistakes. In fact, this one was such a faux pas that I don't want to advertise my stupidity, so I'm not going to tell you what it was. But anyway, I appreciate that, too. But I do like feedback, and any kind of feedback, honestly. Even if it is critical, if you're honest and you're sincere and you see something amiss in what I'm doing, when you criticize me, you only make me a better speaker. And I can vouch for that, considering the fact that when I first started preaching, and I had been into it 5 or 6 years, and I had been preaching at Southwest, a little congregation on the south side of San Antonio, and had the good fortune of having a grammar teacher in the audience. I say good fortune because, and I didn't realize it was good fortune until sometime later, but she corrected me every sermon I preached. Now, if you think I'm a hick now, you should have heard me before, I'm telling you. But anyway, she greatly improved my speech. And I still have problems with I and me, and I've got an English teacher at Odessa, and she catches me every time. But nevertheless, as I said, I appreciate the comments, the feedback. I appreciate the fact that you're listening enough to care about God's message in order to keep me straight. Now, if the grammar goes sideways and you can help me out, I appreciate that too. But I appreciate people who are willing to think. I want you to turn in your books and your Bibles to John, the 18th chapter. And when I refer to a book in this setting, it's going to be the Bible. So if you would turn to John, 18th chapter, around the 33rd verse. Pilate was a confused and frustrated man. He was having some great difficulty. In the first place, he didn't understand the eons of liberation history running through the Jewish veins. He did not understand a people whose independence was so overwhelming and so much a part of who they were that they would do almost anything to secure their freedoms. It was a Maccabean sort of mentality that they had. He didn't understand that envy could deliver up a totally innocent man, a man they knew was innocent to death, for the sake of their kingdom and their people. He didn't understand Jesus' kingdom. Thrust into a position of leadership, Pilate found himself between a rock and a hard place. If you'll pardon the pun, he was in trouble. He begged and pleaded with a crowd to let a man go he knew was innocent and they wouldn't have any part of it. And you can pick up kind of some of the account here as we look at John, the 18th chapter, beginning in the 33rd verse. Then Pilate entered the praetorium again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" And Jesus answered and said, "Are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me?" In other words, is this a sincere question, or are you just parroting those that are questioning who I am? And he answered, he said, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done?" In other words, this just doesn't make sense. Your being here has to have some reason, and it certainly isn't anything I can figure out. He just didn't understand the fullness of times that had come. Jesus answered and said, and this is profound, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here." Pilate therefore said to him, "Are you a king then?" And Jesus answered, "You say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, I find no fault with him at all. And what you find with Pilate, you find today. Individuals who know things just aren't right, but they don't have the backbone to stand up and defend what is right. To make a choice for truth where truth needs to be heralded. And I want to just chase a quick rabbit here again. Folks, you have an opportunity to vote. Do not allow this nation to be overtaken by perverseness. Get out there and vote. Let a Christian voice be heard. We have that ability. We have that benefit in this country. It is a privilege for us. And all too often, like the air we breathe, we take for granted the privileges we have in this country. We're meeting here tonight unmolested. We're meeting here by a right that is given to us by our government, we the people. And if we are willing to turn it over to someone else and relinquish our ability to make choices, we deserve the misery we're going to get. It's time for us to stand up and be heard. Brethren, this guy was just not brave enough to stand up. He knew a man was innocent. In fact, after questioning and quizzing the guy with all of his questions and queries, not understanding exactly what it was that Jesus was saying, although he is a king, but he's not a king of this world, and he just couldn't conceive of it, couldn't get it into his mind, couldn't wrap his brain around it. And yet still he would go out knowing this man is innocent and beg them to release him. We know what happened. It didn't happen. In a mock ceremony, he washes his hands as though that would cleanse him of his cowardice. There were so many misconceptions about Christ in his day. His own followers had struggles. You can remember times on the roads where they were traveling from town to town, from teaching appointment to teaching appointment, where the apostles would be bickering among themselves as to who would be the greatest in the kingdom. You can remember times, even up into the end at the garden, where Jesus was in the garden and he says, okay guys, wake up, here they come, they're coming to take me away. And as soon as the soldiers enter the garden, here comes Peter with his little pig sticker, he's going to take a guy's ear off. And you can see all of this with their misunderstanding. In fact, isn't it ironic that one of the greatest apostles, at least in our view, how we measure greatness, Peter is next to Christ, one of his chosen three, one of the closer of the apostles, takes Jesus aside on one occasion when he begins to describe what is going to happen to him. And says, we're not going to let that happen to you. And Jesus responds, get behind me, Satan. You just don't understand what the kingdom is about. His followers did not understand. But not only his close followers, even those that were extended. I can remember in the scriptures him feeding 4,000 and then 5,000 and then everybody thinking, boy, this is the guy. He can muster an army. He could feed an army. And Jesus recognizes this and tells them, basically, you're only following me because I fed you. Pointing out the fact that the miracles that Jesus did wasn't to put a leg back on a guy so he could be two-legged again. It wasn't to give a blind man his sight so he could see the world in its beautiful colors. It wasn't to give a man hearing again so he could hear all the pretty sounds. It was to show that he is God. That's why he did the miracles. He didn't feed people because they were hungry, per se. He fed them to show them, I am the Christ, I am the Son of God. Listen to what I say. It's of much greater importance. And his followers didn't understand that. In fact, when he started teaching things that were so spiritual that it was beyond them in John 6, down towards verse 60 and following into 66, he teaches them, you've got to eat my body and drink my blood. It blew their mind. Do what? I mean, I'm sure some of them were thinking strict cannibalism, which is basically what transubstantiation is, but we won't chase that rabbit. But the point is, they didn't understand. It was hard for them to grasp what it was that Jesus was talking about. It's the same people as Jesus came into Jerusalem that were throwing their blankets and throwing their robes and throwing the palm branches down as he rides in on this donkey. The same people that would stand beside those rabble-rousers and say, crucify him! They just didn't understand. People today don't understand the nature of the kingdom. They don't understand Christ. They've totally got it sideways. They confuse the notion of the kingdom and the church, which is the same thing. They confuse who Christ was and what he came to set up and where his kingdom is, basically. Many folks are still waiting, thinking the church is just an interim organization, still waiting for the kingdom to be established and waiting for it to come down and be established in Jerusalem on a physical throne, David's throne over there in Jerusalem, which might answer for the fact, for the reason of Israel being so popular in American politics these days and why we have such connections with them. The Zionist movement being what it is. There are lots and lots of folks in this country that call themselves Christians that think it is vital for us to keep tabs and keep connections with Israel because that's where Jesus is coming back to set up his kingdom, not realizing the nature of the kingdom. Fictional works that are supposedly fictional works but based on what people believe to be true, like Left Behind. That book is great for a doorstop, but I haven't found it to be good reading. Total lesson, total series, and I've got most all of the series, read most of them, and they're garbage, folks. It's a labor to read through them. It makes for great fiction if you're into science fiction, but there's no truth to it at all. And yet, thousands upon thousands of people here in America buy those books thinking this is a representation of the way it's going to be because Jesus' kingdom is yet to be established. And yet we know from Colossians, the first chapter, that there were those being translated into the kingdom. Had it not been established and yet to be established, how could they be translated into that kingdom? People misunderstand the church today, the kingdom of Christ today, just as much as they did then. Jesus' enemies misunderstood the kingdom, certainly. Oh, they misunderstood it terribly. That Maccabean attitude of revolt, rebellion, independence, ruling themselves. It's kind of a footnote in history. Most people don't realize that the only reason Judas Maccabeus did so great with his revolt is because most of the major empires of the world were busy fighting each other. And they discovered that about the time Titus rolled into Jerusalem. That should the Roman army decide to put their foot down, they could do so with some degree of authority. And they did. Wiped out the Jewish system, Masada being the last stronghold. Folks, the enemies of Christ misunderstood. They had, for centuries, built up traditions that had become so ingrained in them that they even had set God's word aside. Jesus reprimanded them on several occasions about the fact that your traditions are dishonoring or disobeying God's laws. They contradict it. They make it of no avail, no effect. In fact, his enemies misunderstood him so bad that it continued even far past Christ and his resurrection and the establishment of the church. You can look all the way over into Acts, the 24th chapter is a good place to look, where some of the disciples of Christ, one particular Paul, who was very active as an apostle preaching and teaching, here's some loving words from the enemies of Christ and their attitude toward him. In chapter 24, you read in verse 5, "For we have found this man a plague." Yeah, he's a pandemic all by himself. "A plague, a creator of dissension among all the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of this sect of the Nazarenes." They don't even give them the grace or the courtesy to call them Christians, which by this time they had already begun to be called Christians. You know, Acts 11:26, the disciples were called Christians first in Antioch. But no, we're not even going to do that. We're going to call them the sect of the Nazarenes. You ever been called the Church of Christer? Yeah, it happens today too, doesn't it? You know, things just don't change. The further we go, the more things that just remain the same. People misunderstand the church today, and those who are opposed to Churches of Christ don't understand us and don't even really, I think, understand our claim, what we believe. They don't even represent us correctly. That's unfortunate. In fact, any time I speak about any religious group or any religious denomination, I always make a great effort to represent them as they represent themselves. That's why I have a library of about 8,000 books. Because in that library, I have about 50 or 60 books just on one particular denomination. And that way, if I want to know what they believe, I go to their books and I say, what if they say they believe? Then I won't get the accusation, oh, you cast us in a poor light. Well, I don't want to do that. That's not honest. It's certainly not Christian, but it's not honest. If I'm going to defeat a false position, I want to be honest enough to represent the position as it is represented by them. And you know, it's unfortunate when we are dealt with, that is not always the case. In fact, I find that it is rarely the case. Conversations that I have with denominational preachers that are friends of mine there in Odessa, and we visit on occasion. And it is not often the case that they represent what I believe. And we're going to look at some of that in a minute. But the enemies of Christ didn't understand the kingdom then. The enemies of churches of Christ don't understand the church today either. And very often misrepresent exactly what it is we believe. And then you get into the government. Roman government didn't know what to think of Jesus other than the fact he was just one more of the many rebels that rise up from this troublesome, irksome bunch of people that are always fighting for their independence. They're so incredibly different. Everything about them is not the same as anything else. They have a separate set of laws. They have a separate way of living. Their worship is different. They don't accept our gods. They're just different. They're strange. They're unique. They're different. And that's what made them stand out. In fact, it's an odd thing as Christians, you know, today, is that if we stand out, you make an easy target. Have you noticed that? I mean, if you assimilate, the more you are like those around you, the less easy it is to hit you. You know, you can throw a rock into a pack of dogs, and you know which one you hit because he's the one that yelps, right? But if you got a pack of dogs and a cat in there, of course, me being a cat hater and a dog lover, I'd throw it at the cat. But it'd be easy to find it, right? It'd be easy to find the cat, and I'm sorry for all you cat lovers. My wife is a cat lover, and she'll hate when she hears that I use this illustration. But nevertheless, the government didn't understand Jesus to be anything other than a rabble-rouser, somebody that was different, somebody that was a problem, thought it was no less different than some of the folks like Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, who are hucksters, trying to rip people off, ducking the tax codes, and so forth and so on. Almost a bane to society. You know, sometimes I wonder why it is our government hasn't cracked down on non-profit status a lot sooner than it has. You know we're under fire, I guess, on this non-profit thing. I had a good conversation with my friend who is a pastor at the Baptist Temple there in Odessa, and we had a neat discussion about their new little ministry. It's called the Coffee Cup. And it's a Christian coffee cup. And they only charge a dime for the coffee. And I'm asking, it's what? Non-profit? Oh, well, we don't make a profit. That doesn't cover the cost of a cup of coffee. And I ask him, well, what kind of coffee are you serving? Because it doesn't make me a dime to make a cup of coffee. But it kind of sits on the border, and that's what I explained. I don't understand. That kind of sits on the border of, are you a cafe in business, or are you a church, a non-profit organization? You know, so much runs under the heading of nonprofit these days that are so profitable that people are wondering, why are we not all nonprofit? I mean, you look at my checkbook, it's nonprofit. Trust me. But a lot of folks have figured out in the nonprofit thing how to be very good nonprofit prophets. And they do real well at it. And the government misunderstands the church sometimes, and we're not getting any help from a lot of folks out there who run under this big rubric of the church, this big umbrella of the church, and they claim to be Christian, quote-unquote, and then they got a cafe. I'm just waiting for the scrambled eggs to go with the coffee. But the Roman government didn't understand Jesus in his day, didn't understand his kingdom, and were threatened by anybody who would say they were a king. It's not any different today. But Jesus' kingdom, John 18:36, Jesus' kingdom is not of this earth. And that is in stark contrast to world religions that we are battling now. It bothers me when our statesmen stand up after some of the things that have gone on, not just in this country, but all over the globe, and try to tell me that Islam is a religion of peace. I can't believe somebody would say that. They are either grossly ignorant or terribly blind. And I make no apology for being so bold about that. My friends, Islam is not a peaceful religion. I can show you in their Quran, and I've got a copy, a very detailed copy with commentary. And I can show you where it is a kudu, a feather in their cap. If they kill you, they get a seat in heaven. That is not Christianity. That is not the kingdom. And when they throw that Inquisition back in your face, just toss it right back like a hot potato. The Inquisition was not Christian either. It was Catholic. And there is a stark contrast between the two. It's not the same. Brethren, Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this earth." And while we stand firm and we are soldiers with armor in a fight, and that's what how Paul terms it on several occasions, our fight is not with flesh and blood. It's with the gospel, because that's where the power is. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. It's the power of God unto salvation. So brethren, if we're going to battle, if we're going to get through these misconceptions, we have to understand that we are not a cult. We're not a social club. We're not a denomination. And frankly, it is scary what people think about you and I as members of the Lord's church. Now, if you're a guest here, we welcome you. Appreciate you being here. And I intend, as I go through the rest of this lesson briefly here, don't have a lot of time, but I intend to be very bold about proclaiming what I know the church is and what it is not. And I'm going to dispel with as many of these as I can get to misconceptions about churches of Christ. I'm going to be very bold. I'm not trying to be judgmental or harsh or try to denigrate you in any way, but what I am going to do is show you in the book and show you how the book describes the churches of Christ. And when I am through, I challenge you to look at the religious organization of which you are a part of and see whether or not it matches up to what God said. That's all I'm going to do. I'm going to challenge you to think. And I know that by virtue of just the fact sometimes we don't like to think, that's going to make us uncomfortable. And I'm not saying you're not a thinking bunch. I'm sure you are, and that's why you're here. So I invite you to think. Now, if you are a member of the Lord's body, I challenge you to be courageous. The predicament we are in our nation right now, with this vote coming up, is because people didn't stand up a long time ago and slam the door in the face of perversion. That's why we're here right now. Okay? And if you don't think it can get worse, you're misinformed. A long time ago, when the Israelites came into Canaan, there were perversions there that I don't even like to mention because of the grotesqueness of the perversions. But in a list of about three verses there in Leviticus 18, you find in like around 20 or so, 20, 21, you find three things, and I believe they're progressive. The first was idol worship to Moloch, and it said you don't offer up your seed or your babies to Moloch. Now Moloch, if you don't know who he was a massive god, a hollowed out brazen statue. And his hands were, according to some of the archaeologists I've read, hands were extended like this. And inside that brazen statue was put a fire that would heat that brazen statue till it was just glowing red. And then they had what they called a tophet on the side that they would beat. It was like a drum. So that when they took that small, tiny, innocent child, that little baby, and they went up there and laid it in those hands and fried it alive, Mama and Daddy wouldn't hear the screams of the child and change their mind about offering their child because of the drum beat ringing in their ear. And God said, don't do that. The folks here have done that, and this land is vomiting them up. The very next verse, I'll skip that. The third verse down, the next verse down, talks about the grotesque nature of sexual congress between a female and a beast. And said, don't do that. And in between those, guess what we find? Homosexuality. A male lying with a male as with a female. Don't think for an instant we are not progressing toward that. And it's because we have not had the courage to stand up against that. We need to stand up and have courage. So as I describe the church and how it's constructed and how it's made and where it came from, and basically focus more on the origin of where the church came from, because you tell a lot about persons by their origin, where they came from. And so we're going to look at that. Be brave enough to stand up and have an amen when when the Scripture says this is the way it is. Because brethren, if we can go ahead and just stand up and say, yeah, that's what the book says, then we can begin to defend and dispel misconceptions about the church. I am fully convinced that these things are easy enough for us to understand. In fact, I'm convinced that most of the time it's not a matter of understanding. It's a matter of want to. In fact, the illustration I have is about a small town, much smaller than San Angelo, and yet every small town in Texas has a Bubba. And Bubba would roll up to this stop sign, and every time he'd roll up to this stop sign, he'd just kind of roll, he'd look both ways, just roll right on through, he wouldn't stop. Now, towards the end of the month, when the coffers were getting empty in the county treasury, well, the highway patrol knew that they could fill them up because Bubba would roll through that stop sign. And so they would pull up there, and sure enough, Bubba would roll through that stop sign, and highway patrol pulled him over and stopped him. Give him a ticket. Bubba, you're supposed to stop. Well, there was nobody coming. Well, I know, but it says stop. All right, took him a ticket. Highway patrolman decided to make an experiment out of it, and the next day he stood out there, got behind the bush there at that stop sign, and sure enough, here come Bubba. Rolled up that stop sign, let Bubba White roll right on through with highway patrolman right behind him. Second day in a row, got him a ticket. Now, Bubba's not happy about this, but he says, all right, I know, it says stop. There wasn't anybody coming for 100 miles, you know. May have been above out in West Texas, and you've seen it out there. It's flat, and your dog can run away, and you can watch him run for 3 days, you know. And so you could look down both sides of the road and see nobody's coming, you know. And that's Bubba's argument. Well, about the third day, highway patrolman decides, I'll try it again. And so he gets back there behind the bush, and sure enough, here comes Bubba. He looks both ways and rolls right through. Highway patrol stops him, and Bubba's mad. He hops out of his car now. He said, I slowed down. There was nobody coming. And that officer pulled out his nightstick and started whacking him on the head. Pop, 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 pop. He said, you want me to stop or slow down? I think, this is just Jeff, but I think most of the stuff in the Bible we can understand. It's just the want to. In fact, by and large, when we talk about churches of Christ and its origin, where it came from, its unique disposition, its unique teaching, its stand behind the book only, the name we wear when we belong to it, all of those things are incredibly simple. You know where the problem is? It's the want to. It's not hard to understand when you read things in the Bible. Let's look, for instance, the idea of the origin of the church, where it came from. And this is one of my pet peeves. I'm going to spend just a moment on it because a lot of people have begun to change their vocabulary. And it always worries me when they get away from the oracles of God and they start inventing words. Because you know when you invent a word, you can make it mean what you want. And it may not mean what the Bible means, but you can make it mean anything you want. You can just redefine marriage, you know. And that's what people do when they don't want to go with the book and what it says. And so you start hearing terms like our tradition. That scares me, brethren, when some of my own brethren start talking about our tradition. I don't have a tradition other than one Paul said I better keep when it comes from God. That's the tradition I got, okay, and it isn't mine. That's the key, you see. All of a sudden, with all this personal Jesus and personal indwelling and personal relationship stuff going on that's popular in religions today, we have made now our tradition, our personal tradition. And what we have done is lumped ourselves within the many and varied denominations that run amok in this world, dividing and separating everyone by religious name and creed and organization and who knows what else. I have a problem with that. And one of the arguments I got into not too long ago had a lot to do with our origin and had to do with the fact that, well, you know, Alexander Campbell set you guys up. That's where you came from. Don't buy that. That's something that's thrown in our face on a constant basis. In fact, is I don't know. It's been some time now since I've been called a Campbellite. I don't know whether any of y'all remember being called Campbellite, but I've been called a Campbellite. And I understand why they do that. I mean, it's got to be one of two reasons. 2 Thessalonians 1, 8 and 9. It's either got to be out of ignorance or rebellion. They just don't know that long before Alexander Campbell came along, James O'Kelly in Virginia in 1794, he was a Republican Methodist, decided, when Campbell was 6 years old, not even in the country, to throw away everything like names, creeds, and so forth, and go back to the Bible and see what the Bible said. That was this novel idea. He decided to do that. It wasn't too long after that, when Campbell was 16 years old, that Martin W. Stone and five other men got together and decided to throw things away, which eventually would lead in 1804 to the last will and testament of the Springfield Presbytery, where they basically said, we're throwing it all out, we're just going to do what the Bible says, and that's it. And Campbell really hadn't started quite yet when Stone and all of them got together. As a matter of fact, I have a picture in my possession, it's on my computer, of a building that has on it Church of Christ with a date before Campbell was even born. That's kind of damning evidence to the argument, is it not? Yes. That Alexander Campbell started the church? Now, I will concede to you this. Alexander Campbell was a Sharpie. And I think that's part of the reason they blame us for starting with Campbell. Because when Campbell started debating denominationalists, many of you look back into Restoration history, Campbell threw stuff away too and said, let's not use the creeds and the synods, let's go back to the book and let's see what the book says. Well, when he did that, he was questioned thoroughly and kicked out of a couple of fellowships. He didn't generate one of his own fellowships. He said, let's go back and get into God's fellowship. And that's what he did. And so when he did that, it made a lot of folks nervous, because here's what happens. When you decide that the church comes from Jesus Christ, not from a human, by implication you're saying any congregation or any church that has been begun or started or wears the name or has organizations developed by humans is wrong. And you don't even have to say that, actually. All you have to do is stand for the truth and say that it's the church. Jesus built it. He said he would, Matthew 16, 18. It happened in Acts 2. The Lord was adding to the church, Acts 2, 47. And that's the church I'm a part of. And all of a sudden, you're going to have a firestorm on your hands, because people do not want to admit that you do not have the same kind of organization that they do. Yeah, misery loves company, but we can't be a part of that. In fact, one of the parallel arguments to that might go back to 2 Kings 22 and 11, where Josiah discovered the Bible. He discovered all of these Old Testament writings. All of these things that dictated as to how they were to worship as Israelites and what had been going on was not what God had intended for them. And Josiah, in an attempt to get things where they ought to be, originated the Josiahites' worship. Well, no, he didn't. It wasn't a Josiahite worship, it was the Israelites' worship, and it originated with God. All Josiah did was restore what God had already written. That's what we do, brethren. And the minute we get away from it, we become not the church of Christ. And so you and I can go back to our roots, our origin, and we can understand that Alexander Campbell did not originate the churches of Christ. You know, when you plant this seed in the heart. Great illustration. It's been used 100 times, I know. You know, when a red-headed woodpecker, and I don't know why it's always red-headed. You know, I thought gray-headed woodpecker would work, but it's always a red-headed woodpecker picks up a wheat seed in Kansas and flies down to San Angelo and drops it. What's it going to grow? Red-headed woodpeckers, right? That's so dumb. I didn't even figure that's not right. It's going to grow wheat because the seed is what grows, not the carrier, not the conduit by which it was carried somewhere, planted. You plant, Luke 8:11, God's seed in the human heart, and what are you going to get? Well, you find all those denominational names in this book. Because I'll tell you what, I can find churches of Christ. I can find Christians. I can't find anything else. There are a lot of misconceptions about churches of Christ because they don't understand that little argument right there. They don't understand the simplicity of going back to the book, because they are knee-deep in lots and lots of tradition, like the Pharisees were and the Sadducees and religious people of Jesus' day, who didn't understand what the kingdom was about. I'm about to run out of time. I'm going to hit one more. Chris said keep preaching, but I know how Chris is too. A lot of people misunderstand churches of Christ, especially concerning salvation, and this is a critical issue. It is a central and focus issue, because it is in this issue that we determine, define, and discover who it is we are in fellowship with. And that's an issue today. So many are trying to break down barriers and walls that have been erected, artificial barriers and walls that have been erected between ourselves and others. And I appreciate the zeal. I got to say that and stop and let that set. I really appreciate people wanting to get together. Unity is always good. Union is not. And we have to understand that, you see. And that's where the breakdown in the theory goes, is when you start unionizing instead of unifying, you have a problem. And that's what we've got in churches of Christ today. People who are wanting peace, and I agree, we need peace amongst our brethren, but it's not going to happen until we go back to the book. I want you to turn to 1 John, and I want you to notice with me how it is that you and I have fellowship and how it is that you and I are members of the church and the same, and stick together and have strength together and have all of these blessings and things together in Christ. Notice what John is talking about here in the first place, conceding the fact in 1 John we make mistakes. Okay? I said that right? Mistakes? Snakes, lots of people have phobia for snakes, and they just say, oh, we don't want to admit that. No, we don't like those. Yeah, we do. We sin. We make mistakes constantly. But you know the beauty of it? As a Christian, we can go to the Father and be forgiven. That's the difference between ourselves and those who are not saved. But now how do you determine, once we've decided that we are saved, that we are in fellowship with one another? Well, here's a simple formula for it. This is the message you've heard in 1 John from him, declared to you that God is light and in him is no darkness at all. Therefore, if we say we have fellowship with him and walk in darkness, we do not practice the truth. So right off the bat, here is the critical issue we must understand. Fellowship has its beginning, its origin, its foundation in the individual and God. That's where the fellowship has to be to start with. That's where the foundation is. If you haven't got that, it doesn't matter how many of Satan's minions form a union together to fight. They're going to lose, okay? Christ has overcome the world. So it's not just a matter of getting together with someone. It's a matter of our fellowship with God, our relationship with God. So we've got to get that right. So if we walk in the light as he is in the light, then we have fellowship. But notice this. It says if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another. I want you to note that's a byproduct. Now here's where people make mistakes in fellowship issues. They decide that if we decide to get along, then we get along. But that's not what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches you get along with God, and one of the byproducts happens to be that we get along with each other. You see, you and I don't determine our fellowship. And that's a real struggle for a lot of folks when we step down on the line and say, God drew the line here, I will not cross it. I won't go beyond what God says. How judgmental of us, how terrible of us, how cruel-hearted of us to make decisions about other people's salvation. I haven't done that. All I've done is decide what I'm going to do. But by implication, as it's been since Christ through the disciples, the early church, and today, when you decide to do what's right, you condemn everyone around you. That's the way light does with darkness. When you do what's right, everything else becomes exposed for what it really is. And so right down the path to our fellowship, if we have fellowship with God, the byproduct is we have fellowship with one another. You see, it's when we fall out of fellowship with God that we fall out of fellowship with one another. So, if we're in fellowship and I decide to play a piano and sing a solo for you here tonight, are you going to just get mad at me or are you going to, what's going to happen here? What has happened to our relationship? Are you being judgmental and restrictive and terribly, you know, narrow-minded because you won't allow that or accept that? No, frankly, folks, if you stand for truth, you will not accept it because God doesn't accept it, and I put myself out of fellowship. Too often, folks, the case is we are blamed for causing divisions and offenses when it is not we who stick with the truth that do that, but those who decide to innovate. There's where the problem is. Churches of Christ are unique and special and have no connection or fellowship with anyone who does not follow this book. And it starts with the salvation principle. I mean, how in the world can we have fellowship with God if we're not His child, if we have not done those things He has told us, commanded us, to do, where we have approved examples all throughout Acts and illustration of it all throughout the epistles. You know, I struggle when some preacher gets up and decides to make qualification, you know, side views here of how things can be done instead of doing it God's way. There are no exceptions in God's law. And I love it when somebody throws it at me. Well, what if the guy's out there in the desert and he decides to become a Christian and he's out there in the middle of the Sahara Desert? I say, he can be baptized in that oasis. Well, where'd you get that oasis? Same place you got your desert. Jesus said, if you ask, you'll receive. I believe that. And there's not one person on this earth that doesn't have opportunity to go to heaven if they want to. It's the want to that just really slips by the wayside. It's the want to. Brethren, churches of Christ are unique because we're not going to cut corners. We're not going to change or move the lines. We're not going to tear down walls that God has built. And when He said, if you don't believe, you're going to die in your sin, John 8:24, that's it. You've got to believe in God. And if you don't change your way, Luke 13:3, He said you're going to perish. And if you're not willing to confess him now, when you get to judgment seat, it's too late. Matthew 10, 32, 33. And if you're not going to believe and if you're not going to be baptized to be saved, you're lost. Now that's the book. That's Jesus, Mark 16, 16. That's what he said. And I can't really fellowship you. I can be in contact with you. I'll go eat with you. We'll go talk about it. We'll have a Bible study. But I'm not in fellowship with you until you're in fellowship with God. And until you have become a Christian, you're not in fellowship with God. And you can't even walk in light because you're still in darkness. And I love you when I tell you that. Matter of fact, if you're not a Christian tonight, we're going to offer an invitation in a moment in song to offer you an opportunity to make that change. I'd invite you to do it. You've heard enough right now to know what you need to do to become Christian. But what worries me more concerning churches of Christ are the pilots who have scattered all over the place who know who Jesus is. Maybe we don't know all the details, and we're not scholars concerning theology, but we know what is right. We just can't find that backbone to stand us up. Brethren, it is time for us to put on our armor. It's time for us to face the fight. It's time for us to speak up and understand that churches of Christ are being misrepresented all over the place, and we need to correct those misapprehensions at every opportunity. If you're not a Christian, we offer you this invitation. If you are a Christian, we would offer you the opportunity to respond to yourself or publicly. You may do so also. The elders stand ready to assist you here as we stand and we sing.